Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Mojave Crossing by Louis L'Amour. Read for you by David Strathairn. Chapter 1. When I saw that black-eyed woman a-looking at me, I wished I had a Bible. There I was, a big raw-boned mountain boy, rougher than a cob and standing 6 feet 3 inches in my socks, with hands and shoulders fit to wrassle Mustang Broncs or ornery steers, but no hand with women folks. Nobody ever claimed that I was anything but a homely man, but it was me she was looking at in that special way she had. Where we Sackets come from, in the high-up mountains of Tennessee, it is a known thing that if you sleep with a Bible under your pillow, it will keep you safe from witches. Before they can do aught to harm you, they must count every word in the Bible, and they just naturally can't finish that before daybreak, when they lose their power to hurt. Yet when I'd taken a second look at that black-eyed, black-haired woman, I thought maybe it was me should do the counting. She was medium tall, with a way about her that set a man to thinking thoughts best kept to himself. She had the clearest, creamiest skin you ever did see, and a mouth that fairly prickled the hair on the back of your neck. Most of my years I'd spent shying around in the mountains, or out on the prairie lands, with no chance to deal myself any high cards in society. But believe me, there's more snares in a woman's long lashes than in all the creek bottoms of Tennessee. Every time I'd taken my eyes from that black-haired witch woman, it was in me to look back. My right boot toe was nudging the saddlebags at my feet, warning me I'd no call to take up with any woman, for there were 30 pounds of gold in those bags, not all of it mine. The worst of it was I figured things were already shaping for trouble. 3 days' hard running, I'd seen dust hanging over my back trail, like maybe there was somebody back there who wanted to keep close to me without actually catching up. And that could only mean that trouble lay ahead. Now, I'm no man who's a stranger to difficulty. No boy who walked out of Tennessee to fight for the Union was likely to be, to say nothing of all that had happened since. Seemed like trouble dogged my tracks wherever I put a foot down. And here was I, heading into strange country, running into a black-eyed woman. She sat alone and ate alone, so obviously a lady that nobody made a move to approach her. This was a rough place in rough times, but a body would have thought she was setting up the table in Delmonico's, or one of those fancy eastern places, her paying no mind to anything or anybody. Except, occasionally, me. She wasn't all frills and fuss like a fancy woman, for she was dressed simple, but her clothes were made from rich goods. Everything about her warned me I'd best tuck in my tail and skedaddle out of there whilst I was able, for trouble doesn't abide only with fancy women. Even a good woman with her ways and notions can cause a man more trouble than he can shoot his way out of, and I'd an idea this here was no good woman. Trouble was, there just was no place to run to. Hardyville was little else but a saloon, a supply store, and a hotel at the crossing of the Colorado. Most of the year it was the head of navigation on the river, but there had been a time or two when steamboats had gone on up to the mines in El Dorado Canyon, or even to Colville, now under the waters of Lake Mead. Come daybreak, I figured to cross the river on the first ferry and take out for the Bradshaw Road and Los Angeles, near the Western Ocean. It was talked among the Arizona towns that speculators out there would pay $18, maybe $20 an ounce for gold, whilst in the mining camps a body could get but 16. It was in my mind to sell my gold in Los Angeles, buy goods and mules, pack across the Mojave Desert and the Colorado, and sell my goods in the mining towns. With luck, I'd show profit on my gold, and on my goods as well. Nobody ever claimed I was any kind of a businessman. Least of all me. But if a body can buy cheap and sell high, he just naturally ain't liable to starve. Of course, in all things, there was a reason. And in this case, it was the difficulty of getting either gold or goods through a country full up with outlaws and Indians. Whilst no businessman, I was pretty fair at getting from here to yonder. So I just bowed my neck and plunged in, figuring wherever a body could go, a Smoky Mountain Sackett could go. Speaking rightly, there were 3 kinds of Sacketts in Tennessee, the Smoky Mountain Sacketts, the Cumberland Gap Sacketts, and the Clinch Mountain Sacketts. These here last ones, They were a mean outfit, and we had no truck with them, unless at feuding time, when we were always pleased to have them on our side, for they were mean men in any kind of a shindig. But most of the time we held off from those Clinch Mountain boys. There were some lowland Sacketts, too, living in the Cumberland Valley, but they were rich Sacketts, and we paid them no mind. Pa, he always said, we shouldn't hold it against them if they had money. Chances were, they couldn't help it no ways. All the Sacketts, even those no-account Sacketts from Clinch Mountain, run to boy children. They had a saying over yonder that if you flung a stone into the brush, you'd hit a Sacket boy, and likely, although it wasn't said, a Trelawney girl. I don't know what we Sacket boys would have done without the Trelawney girls. But the only thing I was thinking of now was getting my old saddlebags across the Mojave and to Los Angeles, selling as well as I could, buying as cheap as possible, and getting back to the mines. Now, when a beautiful woman or a handsome man receives attention, it is taken as a matter of course. But I was a plain man, so when this black-eyed woman started paying me mind, I checked my whole card. Not that I'd lacked for attention where women were concerned, not at least after they came to know me. Nor could it be said that I was downright distrustful of folks. There's a plenty of just people in the world, but the flesh is weak and man is prone to sin, especially if a woman is involved. But I was packing gold, and it came upon me to realize there is something about the presence of gold that is favorable to the breathing of beautiful women. And likely this woman, with her witch-black eyes, could see right through the leather of my saddlebags. Only I'd been storing up pleasure for myself and thinking of a time when I could set up to table and eat a hot meal I hadn't fixed for myself, and sleep in a bed, if only for the strangeness of it. And if I hightailed it out of here now, I'd miss both. For the life of me, I couldn't imagine what a woman like this was doing in Hardyville. By the looks of her, she had come upriver on a steamboat, for her clothes showed no dust, as they would had she come by stage or wagon. When the waitress brought my food, the black-eyed woman stopped her and asked, "Isn't it time for the stage for Los Angeles?" "Have to get them a new stage," I said.
"What do you mean?"
"It ain't a-coming in." All of them were looking at me now, so I said, "Seen it back yonder." I was buttering a thick slab of bread. "He who was driving is dead. Two holes alongside his spine. The stage is laying over in the canyon, and the horse is gone. Two other dead men. Passengers."
"Are you sure?"
This was Hardy asking. The buzzards were.
"You didn't go down to them?"
"Not for more than a minute or two. No telling who was laying up in the rocks with a Winchester."
"Mojaves,"
somebody said.
"Or Hualapais."
"They wore moccasins all right, but they weren't Indians. They were Comanche moccasins, and there's no Comanches out here." Everybody started talking all to once, and I set to eating, glad to be let alone. Anyway, it was likely I had already talked too much. One of those men who'd done the shooting might be right here in this room, although I'd cast my eyes about for moccasins when I first came in, habit-like. Seems to me a man has trouble enough in this world without borrowing more with careless words. That black-eyed woman was talking to the waitress.
"But if that stage has been wrecked, how long will it be before there's another?"
"Ma'am, you'll just have to abide. The next regular stage is Thursday." This here was Monday, and I could see from that woman's face that she had to be shut of Hardyville long before that. And it wasn't just that this was a jumping-off place. She was scared. At which woman's lips turned pale, and her black eyes grew large like she'd seen a ghost. Maybe her own. She turned sharp around to me and said,
"Will you take me to Los Angeles with you?"
And me, like a damned fool and without thinking, I said, "Yes." It never does any good for a man to cuss himself, unless maybe it helps to impress on his mind what a fool he's been. But right then and there I did a fair to middling job of cussing myself out for seven kinds of a fool. Here I was in a running hurry to get to California, to Los Angeles, that is, and I'd burdened myself with a woman, and by the look of her, she'd need coddling. Well, I'd been fool enough for one day, and maybe I could get out of this yet. "You'll need horses," I said. "Are you packing much gear?"
My trunk can come by stage. All I'll
Sample complete. Ready to continue?